When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome back to ESPN Scrum Reset for another week. Sam Bruce in the host chair, joined as ever by Christy Doran. Christy, hope you had a chocolate-filled Easter. The first one with your little bloke, Freddie, mate. How was it?
Yeah, good. I actually don't even know if I had a chocolate egg over the weekend, to be honest, because I had a couple of drinks in between working, and then I don't know if alcohol and eggs are the world's best combination. But it was a good one, and a fair bit of rugby and a fair bit of quite a few talking points off the back of some of the performances. So yeah, it was enjoyable. And then the news this morning dropping that Mike Cron, the scrum doctor, is the new scrum coach for the Wallabies. And if you're an All Blacks fan, or if you're Dane Coles, you're thinking, what's going on again?
Dane might be losing his mind there in Japan, given what he was gobsmacked last year when Steve Hansen popped up at Eddie's camp there in France ahead of the World Cup. That clearly didn't do a lot of good in the end. So Dane probably took solace in that. But big announcement this morning, as you mentioned. Mike Cron, the renowned All Blacks scrum guru, scrum doctor, he's known as. His reputation precedes him as an absolute guru in that department. And, compared to what was happening last year with blokes coaching out of speciality, I guess, if you like. So far, Joe's appointments have really, hit the money, haven't they? He's nailed them with Laurie Fisher coming in to look after the breakdown and tackle contest. You've now got Mike Cron as the scrum guru. Chris Thompson, who's spent a lot of time with the Brumbies over the years, also World Rugby, I believe. And Fiji and Drua, I think they're back in the NRC days as well. So well-travelled addition there as well. Two guys that will strengthen that Wallabies coaching group no end. You've got to say that I guess this is the pulling power of Joe Schmidt, right?
Oh, it's a big tick. Big tick. It's a double tick. It's a great start to his tenure as Wallabies coach, assembling a team that's got so much respect about them. And it must be the world's oldest coaching team at the moment, though. If you think about Mike Cron, he looks like he's about 70 going on 100. And Laurie Fisher has forever and a day looked like he's probably nudging retirement more than anything. But good to have those guys there, because off the back of last year, where immediately you were thinking, what's going on here with the coaching team? It's not stacking up. Here, there's real credibility, people coaching in their correct portfolios, and that was the issue last year. Neil Hatley's the guy that he's essentially stepped in for, and he was one of the few coaches that you thought,
yeah,
they've got some runs awards and credibility. And if you spoke to anyone part of the coaching team or the Wallaby structure last year, Neil had a fair bit of the way that he spoke, addressed the media, he knew what he's on about. So, it's a big tick. The next one is the line-out coach, and my thoughts are it's probably one of three people. There's interviews going on this week, I believe. I reckon Matt Cobain's a sneaky chance. He's up in Japan, former World Cup winner. The issue is he's perhaps not got the reputation that others have, and that might have something to do with where he's coached more than necessarily his pedigree. The other two are closer to home at the moment. Jeff Parnelling with the Rebels, obviously their situation might impact, and it might be the perfect fit almost, if the Rebels do go under, to have someone like a Jeff Parling, he'd be able to slot in pretty seamlessly. One thing I'd say is the line-out hasn't functioned for quite a while for the Rebels. Now, is that a Jeff Parling thing or a Rebels thing with guys who can't throw like Jordan Willese, and it's possible? But with the Lions series next year as well, he would be able to bring some coaching pedigree in from what to expect from the Northern Hemisphere. He's also very close with guys like Owen Toolan, who's the former Rebels analyst. The other one that I would be keeping my eyes on is Zane Hilton from the Reds. A lot of coaching pedigree. He's been coaching for more than a decade in the professional game. But if you look at how the Reds as line out has operated this year as well as last year, only joined them this year, but their rolling war has improved a lot. And that's
big time,
just as powerful and important as the line out itself. So those three, I reckon you look at, and it might be one of them get the nod in the end.
Jeff Parling spent a bit of time with the Wallabies under Dave Rennie, is that right? Sort of back in that rugby championship, maybe of 2022, roughly?
No, earlier, 2020, I think it might have been, because...
So that far back, wow.
Well, Dan McKellar, there was a hope that Dan McKellar was going to join, and maybe that was in 2021, perhaps, and then he ended up joining for the next edition for it off the back of finishing up with the Brumbies in 22. So
somewhere in the COVID blur, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
A magnificent appointment there, certainly Mike Cron. It would be interesting to see how that is regarded across the ditch. But we know Scott Robertson, obviously, is bringing a wealth of experience in his Super Rugby coaching team. And as we discussed last week with Ollie Ritchie on the pod around eligibility, there's a lot of moving parts there still. Artie Severe, some interesting comments over the weekend, saying that basically times have changed and this needs to be considered. Still don't think it's going to happen, but there's a real shift in the momentum, I guess, of a group of senior players. It's interesting, Mwonga really hasn't been quoted on it recently. I don't know if he was back originally, but if he's to come out and say, look, the desire is still there, rather than perhaps quash that Tonga desire, which you mentioned last week as well, Christy, that could be interesting.
Yeah, and so Artie was speaking with a Japanese rugby that they occasionally put up the odd player, and I was invited onto it, but I must admit I completely forgot about it with what's going on in Aussie rugby and my life and being busy and so forth. But it's great that they give these opportunities to internationals to speak to the world press, where it goes on Zoom for an hour or two and they speak. And that's where Dane Coles' comments came from about a month or two back, and now similarly with Artie. So I would have a sneaky suspicion that at some point Richie Mulwana will speak, and that will be a fascinating one that you won't want to forget about.
Big time, big time. All right, mate, let's dig into the weekend's Super Rugby Pacific action. Start at Brizzy on Saturday night with a game that certainly lived up to expectations between the Reds and the Brumbies. First sort of 10 or 12 minutes, you thought, wow, this could really be a blowout scoreline. Like, this could be a 40-35 job with a try each sort of inside 12 minutes. I think it was, and a lot of open running rugby. Geordie Petai looked sensational from the get-go, didn't he? Maybe the wing is a spot. Maybe that's something we can dig into a little bit later, also around his contract situation. But a real grind it kind of descended into, a really physical contest. You don't want to say test match intensity because nothing really matches up to it, but it was certainly upper level on, I guess, what we saw on Friday night, up at, you know, a number of levels from the Rebels and Waratahs, you would have to say. Had a lot of feeling in it, and a lot of players enhanced their reputations. If you look at Tom Wright at fullback for the Brumbies in a really rich vein of form, and interesting to hear him talk with Stan Sport after the game around how he, I guess, essentially almost got away from the game, and under one of those players who went on that Barbarians tour last year, you know, really took a lot from that. I think he and his partner had their first baby. That was a great distraction. Came back into the Brumbies camp, was revitalised, and you'd have to say has really thrown his name back in the ring for that starting fullback position. There's always going to be that helter-skelter part to his game, and you never know, as a winger, probably what he's going to do at stages, but when he plays like he did on Saturday night, he makes a compelling case that he's certainly in the hunt for that 15 jersey.
Oh, and he's got to be, doesn't he? And it's good. There's options, and it's not just options that are guys that are playing mediocre rugby, or they're, you know, this is a guy that's been a standout for the last 2 to 3 weeks, and it really kind of, we saw glimpses against the Highlanders, and has kicked on since then. Great rugby, the ability to really outshone Jock Campbell, and that's probably a bit of a blow for Jock as well, because he's looking for a contract extension and he wants to see if he's in the mix for the Wallabies. But when you're outplayed, that's, and you're in that selection kind of you know, you're in the mix and you're trying to press for it and you're trying to go, I'm not like a third or fourth choice, but a first or second choice. It's a big one. It was awesome to see him and his combination with Noah Lolasio continue to kick on, and just the time that they played with the decision making. And that's been, and he even admitted last week in speaking to the Canberra Press that that's his major work on. You know, he knows that he can do some of the stuff that other guys can't do, but it's ensuring that his worst isn't a 3 out of 10, but a 5 out of 10. And his best, we know that it can be close to a 10 out of 10. So fair play, tip of the hat to you. There were so many little matchups there, weren't there, Brucey, right throughout the 1 to 15 and even the bench, where Joe Schmidt would have been putting circles around going, yeah, you're all right in the mix. And you compare it to the other teams in the comp from an Australian perspective, and you can see the real Wallabies makeup, rather than a handful from the Brumbies and a handful from the Reds. I'm thinking 10 from both the Brumbies and the Reds are right in the mix here to be, you know, a squad of 33 or 34, because, you know, even Ryan Lonergan, the guy that's been so close to making debuts, it was another off the back of a really good performance and cameo against the Island, against Moana Pacifica, an 80-minute effort where he was very good from start to finish. Who are some of the guys in the matchups you're looking at the moment from a test perspective and going, big tick, you're in the mix?
Well, Lonna's mate has got to be right near the top. And if you look at, I guess, you think back to Connor Murray, who played so many games under Joe Schmidt for Ireland as the number 9. It's kind of been superseded by Jamison Gibson-Park these days under Andy Farrell. But he's a Lonergan, not the size of Murray, but the way they play the game, I think, is very similar. Strong box kicks, strong passes, can control games off 9 from scrum half there, control the tempo of games with the boot, and has a really strong combination, clearly, with Noah Lolasia, who you probably also got to give a big tick to, as we mentioned previously, because he is kicking around, I think it's about 85%. And that is what Australia need. It was the number one concern going into the World Cup last year. You and I spoke about it ad nauseum on a number of pods, and certainly it revealed itself with first the selection of Ben Donaldson and then how things deteriorated from there. We don't need to rehash it. But having, I guess, Noah and Ryan there, that combination, the existing combination, that cohesion, they played together now for, must be, what, 5? This would be at least their 5th season together, if you go back to 2020. So they've spent quality hours out there on the paddock together, and that goes a long way to, you know, understanding where your 10's going to be, when they might switch up, change direction, go down the short side. Having that familiarity, I think, is massive. Elsewhere, you know, we come to, I think the other thing the Brumbies did really well on Saturday night was take Fraser McGride out of the game, who has been probably the standout Australian player through the first 5 rounds. He was just, I don't want to say a non-factor, but he just couldn't get on the ball. And I think you probably got to give a tip of that to Fraser also as well, that he's making better decisions around when he's attacking breakdowns. But the ones he did attack, he just didn't get near on this occasion. So that was brilliant work from the Brumbies at the tackle contest. And you've got to say that's, you know, a big tick for that entire forward pack.
Yeah, Fraser got 19, made 19 tackles, and he was still had one or two cracks of the breakdown, but yeah, he didn't nearly have the influence that he does. There was once or twice that he was very close to getting the ball. He was backing up, and you can see that one final pass to him, and he probably runs away and scores a couple of tries. And Charlie Kale, really impressive. You brought him up. You made the reference last week that he had a bit of what Pierce Fears about him, didn't you?
Yep, I did. What did you think? You said, did you like that call? Now watching him a little bit closer?
Well, I said at the time, I think it was a good call. And he's the quickest forward, I think, in Australian rugby. My understanding is super explosive, very good at the line out. He made a line out steal early in the game. When the Reds had that momentum about them, he made a try saver too. The Brumbies just managed to win the big moments on the weekend, and there was a couple of things that stood out to me. There was the try savers early on from Corey Toole and from Charlie Kale, but also the the long kick from Lawson Crichton that goes on to the dead ball line. And that was a massive turning point in the game. And I know that Les Kiss is a fan of Lawson Crichton. I know that when you've got a Sully Vunivalu on the bench and he's only a right winger, someone like a Lawson who can cover multiple positions is quite a nice thing to look at. But I reckon if Aaron McAulkin Phillips plays that game, the Reds win. And I've been really impressed with McAulkin Phillips with his ability to be able to... Oh, he's hardly put a step wrong. And we saw a couple of steps go wrong. There was the Crichton knock on as well. And
was he injured, Harry? No, just a straight selection?
Yeah, it was a straight selection. Probably trying to reward the rest of your squad as well and just to keep the morale high. But I think they win that game. I think Rob Bellatini perhaps didn't run onto the board like he usually does. There's a couple of kind of almost false starts, but he still manages to get over the game line. Darcy Swain, the bit of niggle that he provided, he was lucky to get away with one or two late tackles, I think. There's a line, and he was very close to crossing that line. Billy Pollard comes on after, midway through that first half, and I thought he did a reasonable job. He was probably a bit unlucky to get one line out that apparently wasn't straight, and we saw one shortly after from...
Exactly the same.
From Nassau, which he got away with, and then that was a massive swing in the game, wasn't it? Because they get a rolling more penalty try followed by a Nassau try. So a little bit of inconsistency there. I will pay credit to Ben O'Keefe with his officiating, I think, the last 5-10 minutes, ensuring that the clock didn't get away.
That was very good, yep.
Because, that was smart because obviously there was two or three scrum resets and we can't afford for minutes to be lost there in scrum resets. The big one as well, Lachie Lonergan get an injury, Brucey. That's a massive blow for the Brumbies. Their ability to be able to have guys that can come on and finish the games or indeed start the games like we saw on the weekend. What did you think of the tackle that led to the injury?
Yeah, it's really exploded in the last couple of days, isn't it, this discussion? The hip drop tackle, if you like, a term that's borrowed from both the NRL and the NFL. NRL's had a problem with the last couple of years and have outlawed it. We've seen, I think there was one even yesterday in the Tigers Eels game at Combank. Galvin, the young 5'8", has been given a 2-week ban. We haven't seen it too much in rugby, and I guess because they probably happen in different scenarios. In league, a lot of the time, well, certainly when they were initially outlawed, was when it was sort of two or three in the tackle and that one bloke, dropping essentially his weight through the hips and putting all that pressure on the ball carrier's legs and that being where the injury occurred. I've looked at both these tackles, Tate's on Lachie Lonergan this morning and also, on Saturday night, and James Arscott, the Highlanders replacement who tackled Cam Roygaard. Now, Tate's is... I don't want to say clumsy, awkward potentially, but it happened at such high speed. Potentially the only issue with that is the way his left leg comes around at the bottom. But I will premise that by saying, I'll offer the caveat that as little blokes in a big bloke's game, there's only X amount of ways you can make a tackle. And for a lot of scrum halves and certainly smaller guys, it will be to hit around that thigh area and slide down. Now, I think if you're sliding down with your arms to complete the tackle, to kind of wrap the legs up, there's never really going to be any issue with that. Potentially, the way Tate was coming across, and I think it was just his momentum, the way he was tracking across from the inside, that he kind of made the initial hit and got flung. And then I think his left leg just wraps around. I don't think with any great intent, but that's just the way it's played out. Now, Arscott's has just... Roygaard was kind of low to the ground already, and he's just... jumped in, made a good shoulder tackle around that hip region, and then he's kind of rolled over with the momentum again. I don't think there was any issue with that whatsoever. Tate's, it's you can't. I mean, there's always going to be the risk of injury in the game of rugby. I don't think if we had a hip drop law in rugby, which currently the game does not, you would see Tate suspended. But potentially, there's a slight little technique work on there, but. I think you also got to remember that, little blokes playing a big blokes game, there's got to be ways you can tackle. And I think, certainly in these two instances, they're not horribly wrong. I'll be interested to see what the fallout is from here. You don't typically see law trials or changes happen through the middle of competitions. We're always at the start of the season. It's not like where it's just the NRL commission governing itself meets on a Tuesday night, and by Thursday night kickoff, then we've got a new rule that's been expressed to the 17 clubs, coaches and players. So it's not an easy thing to kind of rule on or stamp out of the game. But whether there's a greater focus on it moving forward, potentially, but I don't see it as an epidemic or anything that's going to see a succession of these kind of tackles and serious injuries. I think we've just got to, you know, be prepared to say that accidents are going to happen. Little blokes do make tackles slightly differently. It's certainly how I made a lot of my tackles growing up. There's usually being the smallest, if not one of the smallest guys on the field. So I sympathise with both those guys, but the outcomes certainly weren't great.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's probably the thing too on the same weekend. Quade Cooper tweeted about it. Generally when he tweets, there's one or two aftershocks and it can cause a ripple effect. You're right in highlighting that rugby league probably is more prevalent because of the two and then a third person in the tackle just to finish it off and make it quicker and so forth. But you don't see that so much because of the contest of the on the ball in rugby, which is every breakdown. So, yeah, I would think that it's a wait and see and watch this space around whether or not this is just, it becomes a pattern or not. So, yeah, it's a shame because Lonergan's now likely out for the rest of the Super Rugby season. Roy Gard probably out for quite a few months, you'd imagine. The good thing for the Hurricanes is they've got some real depth at the number nine position, and TJ Perenara scored another try, so I think he's now equal with Israel Folau with his 60th, and it means he's only one further back from Julian Sevilla, the bus. So Perenara very much sniffing that Super Rugby try scoring record.
Yeah, Hurricane Smoke Islanders down there and Dunedin too remain unbeaten, looking very much like title contenders almost halfway through the season. Just before we leave the Reds, Brumbies, Christy, we mentioned him off the top, Jordan Petaia. I think his best game of the season on the wing. And, you know, as a guy who's been moved from 13 to fullback to the wing, back to 13, back to the wing and so on. You know, maybe it is on that right or left wing where he does look most at home. Seemed to be running with real purpose again, broke the line on a number of occasions, particularly in that opening half hour. We know there's a bit of talk around his immediate playing future. Links with the Dragons in the NRL, clearly. I think he might have met with Shane Flanagan recently. But you're leaning towards the NFL might well be his path forward. We saw Lewis Rees-Zammit has just been signed to Super Bowl champions, the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you're going to go anywhere in the NFL, that's the place you want to be, right? Because with Patrick Mahomes at QB and Mr. Taylor Swift at the tight end, you're in pretty good hands. I wonder whether that news has motivated, because a lot of guys do go into this international player pathway, they call it. I was lucky enough to go up to the Gold Coast the end of 2018 when big Emmanuel Miafau was there, and he was the one player to be selected out of about, I think, 40-odd guys who attended this camp at Robina Woods to enter the international player pathway, declined the opportunity. His highlights get sent to top 14 clubs in France, and we all know how that has wound up for Australian rugby. But we won't digress too far. Rees-Zammit's, it seems like rapid progress through this pathway to earn that contract. Now, there's clearly going to be a massive education piece with getting him up to speed on how to play the game. Who knows if he ever plays a down of American football in the NFL. But is Jordan Petaia sitting back and thinking, you know what, the money I'm not going to get here in Australia is clearly gone elsewhere recently. I'm not going to get the massive dollars. Do I want to go to Japan on massive money, Europe, or do I potentially, you know, try something completely different, give it a crack, and just see how it plays out?
Yeah, I don't think that Dragons meeting has occurred yet, but I'm led to believe that there's still interest for that to occur, particularly from the Dragons side of things. Yeah, the reason why I would lean towards the NFL at this point in time is because he's for more than a year been contemplating this decision. So it's not because of Lewis Rees-Sammet that he's gone, you know what, that actually sounds like a great idea. It was already very much in the frame. And Jordan Mattai is off contract at the end of this year. And what's he going to do? We know that Max Jorgensen's just re-signed with Rugby Australia. It means that there's less money for an outside back, particularly one that can play fullback and has ambitions to play fullback. So between him, Tom Wright, that's contracted into the end of 25, Andrew Kellaway's heading to the Tars next year. I think it's still a two-year deal. So that's already three guys that are fullback slash wingers that are contracted.
And probably ahead of him in that 15 jersey, you would say?
I would certainly
Kellaway and Wright.
Yeah, I would think at fullback. On the wing, I think there's been a lot of people that have long said that Jordan Petaia's best position is out in the wing. I think we just saw immediate evidence that on the weekend. He seems a natural one. It allows him to rove a bit. He's clearly explosive. You put him in a one-on-one position, he gets past most because of his strength, and that's another... That explosiveness is another feature which is appealing to the NFL pathways. But he's so good in the air, and I don't see enough of the Reds or Australian rugby use Jordan Petaia in the air. And that's something that if you put him on that wing, he's going to be able to do that more often than not. But I don't think he's in a rush necessarily. I think it's probably more a few weeks away rather than a week away to make this decision. So probably another wait and see.
Watch this space anyway. If he continues to play like he did the other night, he's going to certainly up his bargaining power, you would think. What about the conditions in Lautoka, Christy? Surely that game couldn't have been far away from getting called off because there's an OH&S issue there, surely, with the amount of water that was on the pitch. If you get a breakdown there and your head's stuck in the mud, I'd hate to think what might happen. The Force were always going to be up against it even before that downpour, really wet week, I think, in general in Fiji there. So, they gave it a decent crack in the end, but the locals just knew how to play the conditions better. A couple of brilliant plays from your Marcy's, your Frank Lamani's, and Ravel Talmunda. Out there on the right wing, you love watching him play. They didn't do themselves any great favours with their discipline, the draw with, I know your favourite, Canavere, landing himself. I think it was upgraded to a red in the end. That was just a poor, inexcusable clean out, really. With no arms. So you don't agree?
Well, it was clumsy, but it wasn't a red card. If you look at the lack of force in that and you look at the reaction from Bailey Quinn-Kinzel, he barely, he got knocked back about half a metre but didn't lose his footing and continued to play. It was like he was struck by a feather that had dropped down and he had just been slightly irritated by an itch. It wasn't a red card. It was at max a yellow. I was surprised by it. And, it was clumsy, but it was the amount of tackles that we've seen this year. And you've gone, okay, that looks closer to a red. I was shocked by that. But in the end, it didn't matter. You just on the weather, it was, Simon Raoului was one of the people that brought that up. I wonder how wet it's going to be before calling a match off is considered. And that was particularly in that first half and the first 20 minutes. They were running in massive puddles. And
yeah,
I did think it was amusing when the winger scores the try and then Frankie Lamani, 5 seconds later, just decides to dive into it as well, just because of the sheer love of playing in such conditions. But they were about as bad as I've seen. And it's now the Fijian fortress, isn't it? I think they're 8 from 9 now. And it's hard to see, the momentum, it's awesome. But it's hard to see how they're going to figure out how to beat them, because the Force had a great first opening 5 to 10 minutes. Looks like they were playing the percentage plays, and then they just got sucked into Fijian rugby at a couple of points.
Yeah, Highlanders and Chiefs, I think those first two games they played there back in the end of the 22 season, probably about the last time they were beaten. They might have dropped one game there last year.
The Blues, but only just.
So, yes, it's, you know, going to be vital if they, you know, fancy even a top four position, which may well be beyond them, but certainly to solidify themselves in the eight if they can pick up a win on the road somewhere. Have they got the Rebels this Friday night?
Yeah, Melbourne.
So that could be a good opportunity for them. Certainly won't be playing in the slop, you wouldn't think, although there was a mighty downpour in Melbourne yesterday afternoon, wasn't there, as luck would have it. All right, Friday night, look, Waratahs, diabolical, really. You'd have to say they were hurt badly by the late omissions of Charlie Gamble, Ned Hannigan, and, of course, Angus Bell. When you're throwing in a youngster like Jack Barrett, who I think is 2021, only a couple of years, 19, only a couple of years out of school, out of Joey's, hails from Lightning Ridge, I think, in far west New South Wales, northwest New South Wales. It's a mighty challenge. It was, you know, proved to be a major setback that they couldn't overcome. And you'd have to say on the balance of things that the Rebels deserved the win in the end. But it was driven by the second half addition entry into the match from Taniela Tupu off the bench. And it's interesting, we see a performance like that, clearly against an understrength Waratahs pack, but with this, the recent World Rugby announcements around, look, we want to try and find a way to get scrum resets out of the game. Now, there's, I don't know if it's going to be a law trial or to investigate ways, what they actually said in that release in typical World Rugby fashion, to at least, you know, stop multiple resets that maybe it's you can only take a quick tap and the player moves on. The worry is with that teams then are going to just give away that early engagement or, you know, just be happy to give up a free kick because they will be able to avoid setting the scrum and then giving a full arm and finding themselves maybe 40 metres back downfield. And you look at a performance like that from Taniela Tupu and you think what a weapon the scrum can be and how an important part of rugby it is, albeit one a lot of the time is also very frustrating, the amount of resets. So it's finding that happy medium, isn't it? Because the way he just came on and absolutely had the Waratahs marching backwards, of course, it's an eight-man shove, but we know where the majority of that power is coming from. He basically gets the Rebels home on Friday night.
Yeah, he does. And then he scores. And there was a tip on earlier that he probably could have scored for himself when he was on the Tars' line. But we saw what a Taniela Tupu, who's not even 100% fit at the moment, what a Taniela Tupu can do, and it's distractive. And that's the thing that Rugby Australia must be wrestling and grappling with is to, you know, how long do they persist with the Taniela? Do they continue to lay out the red carpet everywhere he goes because he is emotional and someone that needs so much love and tender care around him, but he's distractive. And he's a popular guy at times because he can liven up everyone and he puts a smile on people's faces. But yeah, it's an interesting point around the scrum resets. And that's why we come back to the Ben O'Keefe stuff on the Saturday evening round. And it was only in the last 10 minutes. And I'm not really sure if they can continue this throughout the entire game. But it frustrates me knowing when scrum resets occur and you see the clock tick away and the game management around that. The Force were terrible in that respect against the Fijians because the last couple of minutes they decided to take a scrum when they needed a couple of quick tries. And as it is, the draw, there was a couple of scrum resets and a couple of minutes got taken away. So, I would like to just to be able to... I don't think you can go away from what what makes rugby rugby, which is it's a game of all sizes and that if you took away scrum resets and only made it into a free kick or not able to take a scrum, it would be taking away a serious weapon for most sides or a lot of sides. And someone like the Springboks who wins World Cups because of their scrum. It was fascinating watching on the weekend and I watched Dan McKellar's Leicester against Newcastle. Newcastle were going for their first win for a long, long time. And Leicester went down to 12 players. They lost a couple of guys or lost three guys in quick succession to yellow cards. And Newcastle just kept scrumming and scrumming and scrumming against the Tigers. And it got to 100. It got to 99 minutes before there was a winner there in the 100th minute with a breakdown penalty that denied Newcastle. But there was 20 minutes basically of just scrums and trying to play off advantage off them. And that was a fascinating one when you put in the context around what's happening in Super Rugby and even wider from an international game. So, yeah, I don't think you can ever go away from it. But having a ref who's a bit smarter around ensuring that time doesn't get away, I think is the paramount thing going forward.
What's your gut feel on how Rugby Australia wants the Tupou situation to play out? We know he's under contract through next year, I believe. Clearly, there's a lot of money there for a bloke who spent a lot of time on the sidelines. Has had an Achilles injury, hamstring last year at the World Cup, a brutal blow, as we know, we've discussed at length. On the flip side, you let him go to Leinster. Who knows how the Guido Law situation might play out, but he would still be available given his many years of service. He'd be well beyond 30 caps now, Tupou. He'd have to be sort of 40 odd closing up.
Oh, he's 50. If he played 50. His 50th last year against France and the eve of the World Cup.
Yeah. There you go. So he's well past the 30 caps. But you get his bottom line, you get his contract off your balance sheet, and he's still available. As you mentioned there, conversely to that, he is such a character. He's one of the few, you know, Wallabies out there who has got a little bit of brand recognition, if you like. The kids love him. He's really grown into this role as a bit of a lovable kind of larrikin, often self-deprecating at times, the way, you know, I was busted, I was blowing so hard, sort of this kind of chat when he explains, always willing to give, you know, praise to his teammates. And I think at the core of it, he's a very, very good teammate. What do you think in the halls of Rugby Australia? Who's making the call here to keep Taniela around? Also, with we don't know what's going to happen with the Rebels, clearly. It's probably inevitable that he would head offshore after next year. But what about in the meantime?
My understanding is Joe Schmidt is keen to keep him. And you can understand, because without a tight head or one or two or perhaps even three tight heads, you struggle to win games to test 40. And when you think about the Lions, and that's the real big, I imagine there's a few performance contract things there for Joe, that if they beat the Lions, that he'll get a bit more money. So I would think that he would do everything he can to try to keep him in Australian rugby. And it'll be a really interesting conversation with his agent, who's now Anthony Picotti, and whether or not, if he was to go overseas, I imagine that Rugby Australia would say there are some places that'll be better than others for Taniela to go if he wants to continue playing test rugby. And I would think somewhere like Ireland and Leinster would be a better one, because you're going to get managed better. They use their entire squad. And we know that there's a very good coaching set up there at the moment. Players typically get better rather than get worse when they go to Leinster. So my gut is that, yes, at the moment, there would be some ideas of we could clean up and really help our balance sheet by letting him go overseas. I would think that they would try to keep him. And if the Rebels go under, bring him to the Tars and allow him to form a really great partnership with Angus Bell. I think from a marketing perspective, he's really important for the game as well. And a bit like Pat Cummins, you know, the Australian cricket captain, he suffered so many injuries throughout his first 5-6 years of his career, and he's turned out to be one of the best bowlers of the 21st century and one of Australia's best ever. Taniela Tupou has a similar sort of ability to be one of the outstanding props in world rugby, not just in Australian history, but world rugby history, if he can get his body right and if he can get managed better. And we're seeing some of that at the moment, I think, with Nick Siles bringing him off the bench, a guy that knows him really, really well. He's not being rushed into it. And that's the benefit of having a Sam Talakai, an experienced guy in his early 30s, he's played international rugby, and even the competition of Apone Famasili, who can't even get a go at the moment with the Rebels because of having a couple of good tight hands ahead of him.
The point with Angus Bell, you know, playing some club footy together potentially in the future, if hypothetically the Rebels did go under. Speaking to Angus at the start of the season, I don't know if you did as well during that Waratahs media day, but it was the last place Angus wanted to be. He'd had enough of talking about the World Cup. he wanted to get out there and rip in clearly, because I think he took you know, that debacle is probably as hard as anyone throughout that squad. But if you think back to that Georgia game, when they did dominate that Georgian scrum, which is, you know, we know the pedigree of set piece and particularly the scrum in Georgian rugby, really started to look good, obviously, with Dave Parecki playing at hooker, who is, you know, just struggling with injury himself at the moment, isn't he? He hasn't been cited for the Waratahs this year. Is he far away, do we know? Or
I saw him 2 Mondays ago, I think, and he said, look, they're not rushing it, but he said he needs to get back because he's probably aware that there's other hookers that are pressing. I would imagine we'll see him in probably a fortnight, 2 to 3 weeks' time. He's probably, from a test perspective, the incumbent, while this captain this is, with Lachie Lonergan's injury, it probably helps Dave Parecki from I'll be in this Wallabies mix no matter what, I think.
Yeah, Matt Fessler, you'd probably say, leading the role there at the Reds at the moment, that, in terms of that Wallabies hooker position. But yeah, that would be, you know, I guess one way to put it, making the best of a bad situation. Excuse me. If the Rebels do go under, you know, Tupou landing in Sydney along with Suoli'i, because the Waratahs are in a real, real hole at the moment, aren't they? You would think, yeah, there's still, what have they got, 7 games before a bye. Sorry, 7 or 8 games before the finals. So there's still time to turn it around. We know they went on a little bit of a mini run last year. But yeah, that was a game they shouldn't have lost there on Friday night, even with those late withdrawals. But a lot of the, you know, errors were inexcusable. And you think about, you know, I felt for Will Harrison. He came on, looked really sharp, didn't he? Set up that try in the second half to get them, what was it, back 1 point shy. But then from the kickoff, just that lack of recent rugby, not any fault of his own. He's had 2 shocking injuries back to back and barely laced a boot for the best part of 2 years. But a little bit of panic there, thinks he's got to move the ball immediately with 3 minutes on the clock. There was enough time there to build a little bit of inexperience. And that was, you know, proved to be the Waratahs' final straw, turned it over. And, you know, a few moments later, the Rebels scored down the short side through down Gurnett.
Well, if you think about the Rebels lineout, which was atrocious throughout the game, it's been pretty bad for a few years, as we spoke about earlier. If you've kicked that ball out and you find touch around that 10-metre line, you put pressure on the Rebels.
Jet Holloway in absolute form against on opposition ball too.
Exactly. And all of a sudden, you're actually out there before having to do all too much work. And there was ample time there. The Rebels haven't been able to show composure like the Brumbies did that last minute against the Reds by you know, getting the clock to tick away very well. Yeah, it was a blown opportunity. It was another kind of game management issue there where a young 10 probably, yeah, it makes the wrong decision, but it was awesome to see him back. And his abilities to step and break the line a little bit, release his arms, was the reason why they get back in contact. But there was just, it was inexcusable, the Waratahs' skill set and their wastefulness. You know, Dylan Peach will be just scratching his head thinking, geez, I've made an absolute mare of that, because he makes the line break off the back of some really good hands from the Waratahs and then finds himself in space. It's only Carter Gordon against 3 Tars and backs himself. If he had just stepped on the inside, he would have been able to find either Mahe Valana, who did his coming there, or Jake Gordon. And Jake Gordon looked so devastated at the end of that match and lost for answers, as did Darren Coleman to a large extent as well. But guys like Joey Walton finding the touchline rather than with a pass when there was no winger out there, just little things we thought, how's this happening? And just ascended. And the scrum issues were at the heart of it. You know, Jack Barrett starting for 20 minutes, getting dragged probably a bit too early. It's another discussion in itself. Why are you putting a 19-year-old out there rather than looking to the shoot shield at someone who's in their mid-20s or perhaps older? But for me, I've looked at the Waratahs and at times I've seen so many similarities with shows with Wallabies where they look to, and they're too frantic. They try to play the game almost at fast forward mode rather than build and sustain pressure through control. And that's probably just a lack of key leaders in positions around how do you win games. And I even asked Jake Gordon at the end, sides get into winning habits and sides get into losing habits. And there's been too many of those Australian teams that have fallen into losing habits. And he kind of agreed that we're struggling to get wins and lose the ability to orchestrate and get over the line. But that was by far the worst Tars performance this year, and I think the worst performance under Darren Coleman since he took over in 2022. It was hard to see any real positives out of that game.
Yeah, and you've been critical, Christy, of the lack of game time for the Waratahs reserve halfbacks. That was a big change on Friday night, wasn't it? Jack Grant came on, I think, about the sort of
52nd, I think it was, yeah.
Minimark, so he got a chunk of time and added a real shot of tempo to that Waratahs attack.
Yeah, it was.
Looked very sharp, pass was slick, was threatening. I gave that ball to... Was that for Gleeson? Was that Gordon earlier on? I thought added a real shot of energy. And then obviously Harrison as well came on, looked sharp before that error, as we mentioned. So at least there was, you know, I guess a change in thinking from Darren Coleman there. We know Harry Wilson, we've spoken about already, is the heir apparent there, whether he gets a crack in the coming weeks. What are the actual injury prognosis around Bell, Gamble, and Hannigan? Are they longer or just in the shorter term?
Yeah, well, Teddy Wilson, but even Harry Wilson.
Teddy Wilson.
I scored a try against the Crusaders, who are pretty good and can't buy a game at the moment either. The prognosis is a bit up in the air for Angus Bell. It's a disc injury, and it's had it before. It could be anywhere between 1 or a month. They're not quite sure, but he didn't train last week, and someone like Anita Hannigan was a bit closer. Gamble, I think, could have been risk. It was the calf. It was just getting a bit worse throughout as the week went deeper and deeper. So you'd imagine that one or two of them might be back. Oh, who knows about Angus Bell? But if Bell isn't part of that Tars team against the Brumbies next weekend, you think, that could be quite it's an almighty task for them, because the Brumbies have now found their feet. They're playing some of their better rugby of the year, and the Tars are winless from their last four matches now, and they're desperate to get one. So I would imagine that there'll be one or two changes. Perhaps Alakai Fekeni comes in at inside centre to provide a bit more poise to the team. But does Will Harrison feature more prominently, perhaps? But there can't be too many changes up front, just simply for the fact that there aren't guys there. And in fact, Mahi Vaiolata is probably not going to play either with his hamstring injury. So he'll be definitely looking back at Clubland. Julian Heaven will play more minutes, you would imagine, at hooker.
Well, Langy Gleeson's probably his best game of the year. Those hands issues have come good and really looked threatening every time he got the ball with his size and power. Looking at their draw, as you mentioned, the Brumbies in Canberra this week, the Crusaders at home, who will be buoyed by their win on the weekend, potentially getting a few guys back. I think Blackadder maybe not too far away. Then the bye, then the Chiefs at home, the Hurricanes away, the Brumbies at home. They have to go to Perth to play the Force, Auckland to play Moana, and then finish off with the Reds at home. So, you know, none of those games are snacks, and there's probably half a dozen of those that, you know, look like probably defeats at this point in time. So it's going to have to be a real turnaround for them to scrape into the finals, you would think. You mentioned it last week. I saw, I think it was Morgan Turinui throwing his support behind it as well in the Herald over the weekend, that Michael Checker may well be the man to come back to Moore Park, or sorry, to Daceyville now, as the base is now, and to right this Waratahs ship, potentially keeping Darren Coleman in the frame somehow, or at least involved in the game in Australia, in another area potentially. Jason Gilmore's the other one, who is waiting for an opportunity as a head coach in Australia, clearly. Is the Michael Checker return a genuine chance, do you think?
I think it is. I think there's been Particularly over the weekend, there's been a little bit more noise about that, and it's not just coming from former players. There's influential figures within Rugby Australia as well who will have a say around who. Obviously, Michael Chek brings a lot with him, baggage, but a big personality, generally speaking, likes to be able to do it his way or the highway. And we know that when he wasn't allowed his way in 2019, how things ended up. So has enough water gone under the bridge? Perhaps not. But they'll also know that he was part of Leinster's. He turned around Leinster back in the mid-2000s when he arrived there, took them to a European Champion Cup. He's one of the only guy that's won major tournaments both in the North and South, and he's the only guy that's led the Waratahs to a Super Rugby title. So there's a lot of ticks there. The big caveat for him, carrot at the end, rather, would be the Wallabies coaching job, and that's still potentially open come the end of 26 if Joe Schmidt decides, you know what, I've done what I wanted to do, I need to prioritise family. He's only contracted into the end there. And if you're Dan McKellar, you probably start to shake a little bit, because who's on the ground, who's in Australia? Michael Checker would be, not Dan McKellar, who would be going into his third season in charge of Leicester. So I think there's some serious merit to it. Jason Gilmour is absolutely a candidate. I wouldn't think Andy Friend is, only for the fact that there's too many people that aren't in the Andy Friend camp, even though I think he's a great person and he's done some good things, most recently with Connor. And David Nussafora, I imagine, would be a supporter of him. So he'd have some figures. Joe Schmidt would be a supporter of him. He would have some people in his tent, in his camp. So that could help him. Nathan Gray's the junior Wallabies coach, and he's a guy that's been desperate to get back into the professional game. So I wouldn't rule out Nathan Gray either. Whether or not it's the head coach remains to be seen, but he's definitely sniffing around for a job too.
It would be 10 years since Chek had coached the Waratahs, finished up in 2015 when he did the Waratahs through Super Rugby, then obviously transitioned, was doing the Wallabies job simultaneously, really, wasn't he, at that point?
Yeah.
Who would be left, if anyone, from that team? Jed Holloway potentially would be the only one I can think of. Jake Gordon, was he on the scene? No, it was, we had Nick Phipps and Brendan McKibben were the nines around then. So it's probably really got to be only Jed Holloway who would be the player still around with the Waratahs since then. Maybe there's something in his personality that this Waratahs group needs at the moment. I'm reluctant to consider Chek another crack at the Wallabies in the future, but I don't hate the idea of him coaching at Super Rugby level again, if that is back at the Waratahs. Clearly, Darren Coleman's days, you would think, are done as the head coach. 3 years, that initial improvement, as we saw, plateaued last year and looking like the team is heading backwards this year. He can't be blamed for a lot of it because, as we mentioned, some of the skill execution and the decision-making on the other night was just utterly disgraceful. And they've lost a few games, clearly by only a handful of points in succession now, but something's got to change. And, you know, we know the Waratahs are the first through the gate with centralisation. This will be a conversation between Rugby Australia and the Waratahs. I think there's two guys. I know Richard Harry is one of them. I'm not sure who the other one is from the Waratahs board, who is also on this Rugby Australia Waratahs, I guess, alignment at board level. But there's a big decision to make because you can't have your team in the biggest city, the biggest state playing-wise, travelling as badly as the Waratahs are.
No, exactly. And that's the key issue and crux of it. And DC actually knows it. DC's, everyone that I've spoken to really appreciates his coaching ability, particularly as an attack coach. The issue is he's not really been doing the attack for a little while, and also he's been doing less hands-on coaching this year. He's still doing some, but Jason Gilmour's done more this year. So that came off the back of a review last year, which was kind of scathing in many respects around how everything was going from a high-performance perspective. So I imagine that there will be changes, and I hope that Darragh's not lost, because he's someone that's 20 years of coaching experience, 25 years of coaching experience, and there needs to be that IP can't be lost, because he'd have a lot to be able to give. Also, from about the next generation of coaches in the Centre Shield, you know, who are their mentors at the moment? How many opportunities do they have to bridge the gap between club rugby and professional rugby? Because we had it saw with McKinnon last year, you know, 1 year with the Reds, and then what's his next role? He's, you know, he's spat out. Where does he go? Back to club rugby? But there's a transition and a void without the National Rugby Championship, Australia A. What happens there this year remains to be seen as well. So, yeah, well, I hope that there's a job out there for him. I just can't see him with the Tars next year.
Couple of other bits before we wrap up, mate. Hong Kong Sevens this week, and a big addition for the Aussie men, former Wallabies captain Michael Hooper. Look, it's been a journey to get to this point for Hoops. He's left his Olympic run really late. What's this? The last of four tournaments on the season, roughly?
Five.
So, look, clearly he's racing the clock here. I did enjoy his fairly frank assessment last week. I'm not the fastest. I'm not the fittest. We know he's playing. It's sevens is a young man's game, right? Like, it's all about speed and power and being able to back up on repeat efforts and really push your body to extreme lengths, even though games only run for 14 minutes. I always had my doubts that he was going to get there, not because of his want, desire, or his ability to play the game, but I just had concerns around that speed or two that's gone out of his game the last couple of years, and this late change of fitness systems at this point in his career. Now, I hope to be proven wrong, because if there's a bloke who deserves a bit of good news to finish out his international career, it's Michael Hooper after what happened last year. So, I mean, it'll make the Hong Kong, which is in a great time zone for us this weekend, it'll be must-watch viewing this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be a cracker. I'm looking forward to it. And also, with the less Super Rugby this week, so the next three rounds are divided into four matches each rather than the usual six, that'll allow for journalists to be able to cover it a little bit easier. But I completely echo your comments. I think if he can stay on the field, he'll make a real difference because of his composure and his ability to break down. That contestable area is so key in sevens. And I just wonder what, you know, hypothetically, crystal balling, if Michael Checker comes back at the Tars, I wonder whether or not he'll ask Michael Hooper to consider coming back, because there's a lot of because there's a Lions year next year, and I wouldn't rule out a George Smith kind of scenario with
which is ironically what happened last year is that Pocock got injured and George Smith came in and played that game in Sydney, didn't he, and got hit in that absolutely frightening head clash at the time, which wasn't actually a concussion, apparently, which clearly wasn't. He came back on from memory. Shows how times have changed there, but that's a really good point, mate. And even just to have that, you know, because I imagine the Waratahs players will already be in camp with the Wallaby squad next year, whoever makes it, of course, and we're looking, you know, well down the road here, but having, it'll be a full house at Allianz for the Waratahs game against the Lions anyway. So, look, it's not a bad shout.
The other thing is, if you look at 2014, we all know, you know, Israel Folau, Joseph Suala's coming, by the way. There was the real flashy toys, Kurt Lebeil, Young, Bernard Foley, Wycliffe Palu, it's Tafu Pilota now, the list goes on. But you know who we brought in as well, Michael Checker? Guys like Mitch Chapman, Steve Hoyles, guys that had been there, Brendan McKibben, guys that had been there and done that, and they set the culture of the club. And they were so pivotal in ensuring that the Waratahs got across the line. They don't win that without those three guys being there. You only discover that when you talk to the Waratahs class that recently retired, the guys that finished up in 2019. Some of the things that they've pointed out that I've seen in my conversations is how important they were in setting standards. And I just wonder at the Waratahs at the moment, who are those guys?
Who's setting the standards?
Yeah, over 30. And the ones that are over 30, they've got baggage because they're bloody frustrated because they haven't won enough over the last 5 years. And they've seen changes from a board level, changes from a coach level, changes from a GM level. Been too much change, not about enough stability and not enough leaders within that who are just hard heads that might not have played for Australia, but they're the reasons why you typically win Super Rugby competitions.
Yeah. Anyways, we mentioned Hong Kong. Yeah, great viewing this weekend. Aussie Sevens, men's sevens are in the thick of it week on week. We know how good the women are. They'll be looking to bounce back after that loss in the final. Where were we in LA to the Black Ferns women's LA or Canada was first? One of the two.
Canada was first, yeah.
So, good viewing to come this weekend. Super Rugby women's made in Australia. The Waratahs girls, unlike the men, are absolutely flying. Look, this is a really strong program, isn't it? The women that come in do a job. They've got pace out wide, great finishes, power up front. Thumps the Fijiana Drua last weekend in Fiji and back to that with a really strong performance against the Rebels, albeit with a bit of a Rebels fight back after halftime, which was great to see. But they're certainly looking very much like competition favourites. And great to see the Brumbies get a win over the Reds as well. I think the first time in their history. So
well, great to see it. Reds are 0-3 now, so it's amazing. Last year's finalists are struggling at the moment, but yeah, the Waratahs and the young winger flying.
So, what will be the Waratahs Brumbies in the women's this weekend as well? Makes sense doing a doubleheader, but off the top of my head, I'm not sure. But great to see, you know, that competition. I think is growing exponentially year on year, and more players coming through, and will be pushing for a Wallaroos who've got another big calendar coming up this year.
Yeah, they sure do. More rugby the better, more double headers the better, and that's what everyone asked for. So, yeah, awesome. And, it's found some attractive rugby there. So the competition with more professionalism coming into it, it's only a good thing.
Absolutely. All right, mate, that's a good wrap on this Tuesday after the Easter long weekend. I know you're flat out, a few drinks here, as you said there, a few match reports and a bit of news around as well. Good to see. I've still got 2 weeks of parental leave up my sleeve, so I'm tracking back, be back on deck fully in a fortnight's time. I'm looking forward to that, and having come out of 2 weeks of daycare induced sickness, I'll be ready for a bit of adult company.
I can imagine. The other last one, European Championship Cup this weekend, so there's crackers. I think it's a quarterfinals weekend,
yeah.
So a lot to look forward to, but yeah, cheers for your company.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you again in 7 days' time. Until then, enjoy the footy. Cheers.